The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Jessen, Judge Cochran, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Lucinda Jessen presiding. The issue before the court is A-20-0425, State of Minnesota versus Larry Dale Taylor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals for our second oral argument of three this morning on Zoom.gov. It's October 8th, 2020. Just let me go over a few of our basic rules, which are similar here on Zoom as they are in our physical courtroom. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument, and Mr. Heck is counsel for appellant. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'll remind you to introduce yourself when you begin your argument, so that is clear on the tape recordings that we have of this and post on our website. And finally, you'll notice that there is a timer in one of the squares. So that will help us all keep track of your time. With that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Luke Heck, and I am arguing on behalf of the appellant, Larry Dale Taylor, in this matter. The issues in this matter is limited to whether or not law enforcement in Mr. Taylor's matter had reasonable or articulable suspicion to expand the scope of the otherwise lawful traffic stop to investigate Mr. Taylor for potentially DWI by inquiring to him whether or not he had consumed any alcohol. To give a brief posture of the facts here, Mr. Taylor was stopped for having one, and part of the record establishes that there was no front license plate. Regardless, the back license plate was obstructed by snow. It was winter months. At that point, there's a traffic stop. Deputy Grandbois approached Mr. Taylor's vehicle, observed that there was, at one point during initial contact, a open case of beer, not an open container of beer, in the back seat of the vehicle. At that point, subsequently, Mr. Taylor was brought back to deputy squad car, and it was determined that Mr. Taylor's vehicle was canceled as inimical to public safety. At the district court order here relied upon the case of beer in the back seat, of which Deputy Grandbois testified he did not identify any actual cans of beer at the time he inquired to Mr. Taylor's alcohol consumption, whether or not he testified that prior to inquiring to Mr. Taylor's alcohol consumption that day, that he did not identify or was not able to identify any cans of beer that were outside of the case that were otherwise in the vehicle at that point, which is relevant because the question now becomes, at the time of the stop's expansion for the DWI investigation, which we persist based on the precedent such as Savong and State v. Ford, was at the time of the investigative questioning by the deputy to Mr. Taylor about whether he consumed any alcohol that day, that there was not reasonable suspicion, as the district court relied upon, which was Mr. Taylor's license being canceled and the open case of beer. Mr. Taylor would concede undoubtedly that for reasonable suspicion, there only needs to be one indicia of impairment to support the expansion. Indicia of impairment being the operative words there. There's an open case.
Mr. Heck, if I may, go ahead, Judge Cochran.
You go ahead, Judge Jessen. I'll follow up after you. Thank you.
I just want to make sure I understand your argument. Are you saying that pretty much is a bright line rule to have that law enforcement must observe some objective indicia of intoxication in order to have reasonable suspicion here? Is that your position?
Yes, it is, with a preface or a nuance, is that there needs to be indicia of either intoxication or impairment, which I guess could be interchangeable, in a lot of circumstances. But yes, and I would go further to say that it's not even necessarily our position, but under what State B holds, which the state's relying on, the court has previously indicated that an officer need only to have one objective indication of intoxication to continue constitute reasonable and probable grounds to believe a person's under the influence.
That case doesn't say that objective indicia of intoxication is the only way you can get to reasonable suspicion here, isn't it? I mean, obviously it's one.
It doesn't, correct. I mean, had there been, and the issue with that, I guess, is to some extent, I would agree with that. The question comes for to investigate criminal activity in this particular situation, driving while impaired, there needs to be the indicia to support expanding the scope to investigate any potential impairment would be indicia to support that based off the officer's observations.
Following up on Judge Jessen's questions, can you cite to us a case that holds that there must be at least one indicia of intoxication in order for there to be a reasonable suspicion of DWI to expand a traffic stop?
I don't have a case that I could per se cite in that regard that establishes that there must be one. I guess I would go back, and I apologize for being redundant, I would go back to the Holtz case that was referenced earlier, where I guess—
Well, counsel, have you reviewed State v. Lee? I know the circumstances in that case are a little different than those here, but I think the court in that case found that an officer could have a reasonable suspicion of intoxication, even if none of the commonly known physical indicia of intoxication are present.
I vividly recall reviewing the case. I would be misrepresenting to the court if I told you I could tell you the particular facts and circumstances of that case and the holdings on it. I do recall it in the review. Understanding that's not a great answer, I would, I guess, go back in response to that note.
Well, why don't we turn then to the argument you made in your brief, which I think is that the circumstances that the district court found here as supporting the expansion are not sufficient to provide a reasonable articulable suspicion of intoxication or being under the influence. And I think the court relied on both the open case of beer and defendant's license status. And I understand your argument that each of them individually isn't sufficient to give rise to a reasonable articulable suspicion of driving under the influence. But what about the combination? Why isn't the combination sufficient where the officer has knowledge that persons who have had their license canceled frequently have them canceled due to past DWIs, and there's an open case of beer in the back seat? And I think even on cross-examination, there was a question to the effect of that the officer observed a couple of cans of beer that would have been removed from the case, correct? And the officer answered correct. So given those facts, why isn't the combination of the totality of the circumstances sufficient to support a reasonable articulable suspicion that the driver was intoxicated?
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess first to answer the portion on cross-examination about the cans, I do know at one point Deputy Granbois identified cans in the vehicle, but however, that occurred after the investigative questioning of whether Mr. Taylor had consumed alcohol or not. And that is at page 26, transcript at page 26, lines 6 through 14. I guess is that portion that I'm relying on in that response. In regards to the totality of circumstances.
So you're saying that evidence, that testimony shouldn't be considered?
Correct. For the basis of it's the information that was readily available to Deputy Granbois at the time of the expansion of the stop. And in regards to the totality, when you piece them together, the canceled license and the open case of beer together still do not establish that at the time of the traffic stop that Mr. Taylor had consumed alcohol at all, let alone any indicia that he was impaired by alcohol
But the standard is a reasonable suspicion. The officer doesn't have to establish that he consumed it. So why isn't it a reasonable suspicion?
Well, it's not a reasonable suspicion on the totality because it passed conduct, for instance, with the canceled license, even if it was solely for DWIs, for the canceled license, fails to establish that the past conduct is supports that there is an active ongoing criminal conduct with the DWI. And tied together with the open case of beer, I would go back to, in the totality, looking at the fact that there was no corroborative indicia or information readily available other than the case of beer itself that would raise suspicion that there was active consumption or recent prior consumption, meaning that day, to support that he had consumed it either.
Mr. Heck, can I just maybe in a with the hope of putting an outward boundary perhaps on what you might concede totality of circumstances might be, if hypothetically here we have the same two facts, the open case, the beer, and the driver's license status, and there was an odor of alcohol, would you concede, number one, at that point, the totality of circumstances would support further investigative expansion, but secondly, would you agree that that in and of itself would not yet be a single indicia of impairment?
I would agree with the hypothetical. I would concede that if the odor of alcohol was present here, that there was reasonable suspicion objectively to expand the scope of the stop. And I say that confidently because I've made such arguments in front of this court before unsuccessfully with just the odor of alcohol. And I would, and at that point, I believe it was State versus Preveston LaRue, which was unpublished. There was also with the odor of alcohol, I would concede that this court has held that it's reasonable suspicion, although it isn't a per se indicia of actual impairment or intoxication in itself.
So the point that, and this goes to the earlier questions both Judge Jessen and Cochran asked, you would agree that the state does not have to show an indicia of impairment to expand. That would simply, because that hypothetical would not necessarily be impairment, but it would justify a reasonable expansion of the search.
I would agree with that. And I would go further to maybe describe it or coin it as indicia of alcohol consumption would support reasonable suspicion in that circumstance when there are circumstances like the odor of alcohol. In this particular case, that there was no odor of alcohol, there was no, and I understand that it doesn't need to be every single common indicia of impairment or alcohol consumption need to be present, but even the uncommon indicia of alcohol consumption, there is no abnormal conduct or abnormal observations as to Mr. Taylor's mental or physical state whatsoever, or any physical characteristics of Mr. Taylor whatsoever to support the expansion. Where instead, the state and the district court order was relying upon variables that had nothing to actually do with Mr. Taylor's ability to operate the motor vehicle other than he shouldn't have because it was canceled.
So, Mr. Heck, yes. If I may.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask about a different issue. My understanding of the record, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the deputy decided to arrest your client for driving with a canceled license once he found out about that. And it was after that decision he testified that he asked the questions, which are really the issue here. So should we be looking at the issue about whether, you know, if he's going to be arrested, lawful arrest for driving after cancellation, that his drinking was going to be discovered, you know, as part of that arrest? Is that something we should be considering here?
I'll certainly intend on double checking myself because I'm of the impression that the record was that the inquiry occurred prior to the actual formal custody of Mr. Taylor at that point, understanding that it was inevitable for the arrest likely with the driving after cancellation. I guess in response to that, I would rely on the United States Supreme Court decision in Pennsylvania v. Bruder, which states that lower courts must be vigilant that police not delay formally arresting detained individuals to subject them. I'm not suggesting Mr. Taylor was subjected to an intimidating interrogation at the scene of his initial detention, but point being that not the delay in arresting Mr. Taylor for cancellation in order to question him as to his alcohol consumption, I believe in that circumstance would otherwise be prohibited, where the inevitable discovery of his alcohol consumption would be improper for consideration after the fact in that sense, because law enforcement is required to use the least intrusive means readily available to confirm or dispel their suspicions of criminal activity as well. If it would have been
discovered. Counsel, I have one, sorry to interrupt. Your time is short, so I have one quick question for you. Assuming we were to agree with you that this was an improper expansion of the scope of the stop, it seems to me we would need to reverse and remand, not just reverse as you're requesting, because there were two other findings of guilt that weren't adjudicated. And besides the DWI, the DWI was the only finding that was adjudicated that he was convicted of. And the testimony regarding his license being canceled preceded any expansion of the stop. So would you agree that it would be appropriate to reverse and remand if we were to agree with you?
Yes, Your Honor, and a good point. You would need to be reverse or remanded because Mr. Taylor was undoubtedly guilty of driving after cancellation and would need to get sentenced consistent with those other convictions in that regard too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heck. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning. Can you all hear me? Thank you. Judge, I want to begin by providing a little bit of clarification. My brief, I think I had maybe misacknowledged the standard of review and the nature of the issue that the court is presented with here today. And I think in my brief, I thought that this was more of a question of whether or not the trial court correctly applied the applicable law. And I said that the standard review under such an issue would be de novo. I think what we're looking at here is maybe a mixed question of fact and law. And so I want to begin by at least looking at the facts that were found by the trial court, which I think the court would then review with the standard of clear error, which I submit the trial court did not err in finding its facts. And then with a brief discussion of the applicable constitutional law. So I think there's one crucial fact here that's kind of at the crux of this case, and that's that's Deputy Granbois' observation of that case of beer. And that by itself might seem like a somewhat harmless fact, and as I think acknowledged during Mr. Heck's argument, maybe is not that by itself an objective indication that the driver is intoxicated, but that case of beer it was more than just a case of beer here. And I think there's four different parts of that observation that deserve further analysis here. And the first of which is the fact that case of beer was located in a car that had just been driving on the road. Deputy Granbois pulled that car over for an obscured license plate, not being able to see the plate. He observed that case of beer in that vehicle. Number two, he also observed that case of beer not only in that vehicle, but it was directly behind. He testified to this directly behind the front driver's seat of that vehicle. He testified to that. The trial court found that fact to be, as testified to, credible. The significance of that is the fact that if it's directly behind the driver's seat, that means it's accessible to the driver, that case of beer, that being accessible to the driver.
Is there any testimony to that effect? I don't recall that in the record.
There is no testimony to the effect of the accessibility, Judge, but I do think it's significant that the deputy testified that it was, I think he said, directly behind that front seat.
Does that make it an open container violation because it was in the cab of the truck as opposed to in the bed of the truck?
Quite possibly. I think that is the standard there is whether or not it, well, I think we might be looking at an open container.
I mean, does that bear at all? If it is, does that bear at all on the analysis here?
I think it goes to the totality of the circumstances here, Judge, just in indicating whether or not this driver who had a case of beer in his truck has got some issues with his license plate and everything. It at least in Deputy Granbois' mind, in the full totality of those circumstances, at least contributed something to his ultimate suspicion. I think there, it's significant that this was a case of beer that was not, it was an open case. It was not a closed case of beer. That's, I think, further contributed to Deputy Granbois' ultimate suspicion here. And fourth and finally, Deputy Granbois testified to, and the court found that beers had been removed from that case. And I think with those four things, the fact that it was in a car that had been driving behind the driver's seat, it was open and beers were missing, is significant. And it's more than just, it goes to more than just a case of beer being found in a car. It's more than that here when you look at it further.
Counsel, is not the issue though, what crime is afoot in particular, such that the officer had a reasonable basis to expand? And here, as I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the expansion is simply, have you drank any of those beers? Correct. Sure. So if that's the case, so we have two issues. We have the two facts. And the question is whether separately or together, it would warrant asking that question. If the officer, I understand there's, it's undisputed, there was no signs of an open container in the vehicle. So I assume you would agree having a case of beer, and that's all we know, with closed containers would not be illegal in the car. There's no observations of an odor of alcohol, so no, nothing related to impairment. And then we have the driver's license status, of which I assume you would agree asking the question whether you drank beer would be irrelevant. So my question is, how do those two facts in a totality lead to a suspicion that driving while impaired is afoot? Or perhaps to say it another way, that's why I asked the hypothetical of Mr. Heck. He seemed to agree that in almost all of our cases, never do we get the ones where there's no bloodshot, watery eyes, driving conduct, odor of alcohol. So that's all missing. So can you help explain how that might be the case? And I'm thinking of the Burbach case in particular, where the search was illegal, notwithstanding an open container, but that's because the passenger conceded it was the passenger. So there you had an open container and that was it. We don't even have that.
Sure. And I can appreciate that. So I think there's, in addition to the open case of beer, Judge, is after Deputy Granbois observed that case of beer, he didn't ask about it right away. I think due to the weather, he brought, and to clarify the license issues, he brought Mr. Taylor back to his squad car. And this was found by the court and articulated by Deputy Granbois in his testimony. In the squad car, Deputy Granbois started investigating into Mr. Taylor's license status. He found that his license status was canceled as inimical to public safety. That's the second fact here, Judge, I think, in addition to the mere observation of the case of beer, that leads us to reasonable articulable suspicion to expand the stop at that point.
But isn't it true that status does not, there's many different ways in which one might obtain that status. One, of course, is a driver's license history. And of course, the officer testified, as I recall, that that's common, but there's other reasons why one might have that status. Maybe to ask it a different way, did the driver have any obligation to answer that question? Where would we be different if the driver just simply ignored the answer to that question?
Well, Judge, I think it's significant in the first place that the driver volunteered that information. But I take the position that at the time that Deputy Granbois posed that question, did you consume any alcohol? He was acting on the information that he had seen the case of beer and that Mr. Taylor had that DACIPS license status, which he testified to. And Judge, I acknowledge that there's many different ways that people can have that license status, but Deputy Granbois in his testimony testified to that in his experience, that's commonly associated with people that have driving while intoxicated and offenses. And based on that, Judge, it's not that Deputy Granbois then like went directly to Mr. Taylor's car and started searching it. I think his question was directly and incrementally tied to the amount of suspicion that he had at that point and was merely posed as he's got the case of beer in his car. He's got DACIPS license status. I think it's entirely warranted for him to just merely pose the question to Mr. Taylor at that point. have you consumed any alcohol? Mr. Taylor's response thereafter is unequivocally, he had about six, I think, before, is what Mr. Taylor testified to after being asked that question. So I think Deputy Granbois was constitutionally justified at that point to pose that question based on those factual circumstances that existed even before he made that, he posed that question in the first place.
If I may, counsel. Oh. How, if at all, should the fact that there was a separate basis for his arrest, the driving after cancellation, factor into our analysis here?
I think for purposes of what we're looking at right here, Judge, it really doesn't matter. I think if we were talking about whether or not the scope was reasonably expanded to include field sobriety tests that occurred not at this at the scene of the incident, but at the jail, then there might be some significance to the fact that Mr. Taylor was arrestable for the DAC-IPS violation at that point. I think more significant is just the fact that he had that license status in the first place, not the fact that he was necessarily arrestable at that point. And Judge, I would even submit to the court possibly that Mr. Taylor was arrestable on the DWI offense as soon as he admitted to consuming six beers. I think without the field sobriety testing or anything else, there might be probable cause to arrest on both of those bases at that point.
Counsel, you would agree, though, that when the officer asked him if he had been drinking, that was an expansion of the original traffic stop.
I do acknowledge that, Judge, yes.
Okay. And in your view, would the open case of beer by itself be sufficient to expand the scope of the traffic stop? Is that what you're arguing here?
I think under these particular facts, Judge, and like I kind of said initially, it's one thing to just have a case of beer in a vehicle. It's another thing to have a case of beer in the manner in which Mr. Taylor had that case of beer in his vehicle, which again, it
but
was.
How does that indicate that he'd been drinking recently? That's where I stumble.
Well,
just because it's open doesn't necessarily indicate the time at which the it was opened.
That's fair, Judge. I do think that under these circumstances, though, again, the fact that there were some beers missing from that case as well, I think at least warranted this very small and incremental expansion of the stop at that time to simply ask about, hey, have you consumed any of those beers from that open case that is missing beers behind your driver's seat? I just think under these particular facts that it's significant in and of itself. And I think
so. Can we properly consider that testimony about beers missing from the case? Mr. Heck argued that we shouldn't consider that testimony because it was after the scope of the stop was expanded.
So Judge, I my understanding of the facts as testified to by Deputy Granbois and as found by the district court is that I think that Deputy Granbois had observed those beers to be missing from the case when he made the initial observation of that case of beer.
Okay, thank you. I'll go back and look at the transcript, but that's helpful. In any event, the district court didn't rely on that. The district court relied solely on the fact that the case was open and his license had been canceled, correct?
And the fact that, I think maybe the most significant fact of the different kind of analyses that I've used to break down this one single thing is the fact that it was an open case of beer. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily the same as an open container under the law, under that particular statute, the open container statute, but it is an indication that alcohol was in the car, that the case containing that alcohol had been opened, and then possibly that beers had been removed from that case. And so I think that the Constitution, the applicable constitutional law here, judges would agree that under these particular facts that Deputy Granbaugh was constitutionally justified in expanding the stop that he, in the way that he did. I mean, again, this was not, this was incremental. It was not, Deputy Granbaugh didn't do anything beyond the scope of what he was constitutionally entitled to do or to investigate when he acted on the facts that he knew them at the time that he made his actions.
Counsel, can you cite us to any case similar to this one where the expansion was upheld in circumstances like those presented in this case?
Judge, when I wrote the brief, I tried to find factually similar case. I think the thing that is most distinguishable about this case, we don't have those classic indicators of intoxication, but I submit to the court that that's not necessary. It's not necessary that to expand the scope that physical indicators of intoxication need be present to investigate a possible DWI. The presence of an intoxicating substance by itself in the manner that it was present here, I think is enough for Deputy Granbaugh to have done what he did here. Yeah.
Counsel, if I can, I think one of the things that troubles me is that we're basing reasonable suspicion on an open case of beer, not an open container, and someone's status. And, you know, just as a policy matter, thinking about is it's if your status was, if you knew someone was on probation or you knew someone was on, you know, was just had been a felon, even no longer on probation. Where does status plus something that's pretty innocuous, you know, saying that ends up being reasonable suspicion in and of itself, that troubles me. I just want to give you a few seconds to help me with that.
Sure, and Judge, I acknowledge that it is a troubling concept at its core. I just think that under these circumstances that it was not on his license status alone that Deputy Granbaugh acted on this suspicion. I think it's kind of akin to police in their systems having flags for possible drug users and something. That does not create grounds to just search people at random, but it can contribute to an officer's overall understanding of the full circumstance of an event. I think it just needs to be limited in its use.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hepp, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Justices. First of all, I just wanted to note, and I'm not suggesting Mr. Pocold is doing anything intentionally, you know, in regards to the number of beers.
Mr. Heck, I'm having trouble hearing you. Could you speak
you
up
better?
Or more
can you hear me better? Can you hear me better
yes.
now?
No, we can't.
Sorry, I was looking down. I just want to note that Mr. Pocold had indicated that the admission initially was to 6 beers, and the initial admission by Mr. Taylor, even though at that point the response there to the question was expansion, I just want to note on page 15 of the transcript at the first 1 through 5, it notes that initially in response to that question, Mr. Taylor admitted to 1 to 2 beers, and it was later in his investigation that he identified that it was in later admission to 6. So at the time of the question, the response was not 6. Second of all, in regards to the circumstances, for instance, in State v. Lee, which I, at least the one that I was thinking of is involved, it was a criminal vehicular operation case where the Minnesota Supreme Court indicated and noted that there was an accident that was involved, the time of night being relevant, where here Mr. Taylor's 7 o'clock at night isn't synonymous with alcohol consumption. And there were physical characteristics or statements made while the driver of a motorcycle was injured that at least the court found and law enforcement found would be consistent or support under the influence where none of those factors are present here. Additionally, in regards just to address the essentially inevitable discovery, you know, circumstance with the expansion, being that there was an arrest for driving after cancellation, I think it's relevant to note here that the odor of alcohol wasn't identified by Deputy Granbaugh until actual field sobriety testing was occurring at the jail. And so what the precondition to get to field sobriety testing at one point or another at that point presumptively would have been the admission to Mr. with but for Mr. Taylor making that admission at that point. I don't know if there can be an assumption that at some point, if he takes him to the jail for the canceled driving charge or driving after cancellation charge, that he would have been in an investigatory situation to where he would have otherwise identified that odor either. Maybe he would have, maybe not, but I guess either way, I don't believe that is considerable. Additionally, in regards to the beer case and beer cans, it's solely that the deputy observed the open case of beer. At no point prior to the expansion was there actually an observation of any beer cans outside of the case, meaning, you know, there was nothing there to support one way or another that there was anything actually in the vehicle, like a can in the vehicle that wasn't in the case at that point. And furthermore, you know, there's also facts that were laid out in the district court's order, such as Mr. Taylor, you know, Deputy Granbois asked questions of Mr. Taylor prior to asking about his alcohol consumption that were certainly permissible, such as was, you know, where are you coming from? Where Mr. Taylor told me he had just left work, the otherwise lawful and harmless questioning as to Mr. Taylor's trip plan and his activities and so forth was done, and it yielded no results that would otherwise, you know, provide the information or indicia to support Mr. Taylor consuming alcohol either. So in some circumstances, like in this one, if there just isn't that evidence to support reasonable suspicion based on those two items that were being relied upon here to support actually Mr. Taylor reasonable suspicion for driving while impaired. And I think one consideration here that may be collateral but relevant as well is, you know, at the heart of proving a DWI element wise, it requires either a 0.08 or greater per se, which the precondition would be some alcohol, which then opens the door for odor of alcohol being an appropriate consideration to expand it, or actual, you know, impairment or being under the influence, which would require some mental or physical indicia as well. So I think that's what separates the odor of alcohol, at least comparatively to, you know, driving after cancellation or the open case of beer in the back seat. And I understand my time is up. I thank the court and Mr. Foucault.
Thank you both for your helpful arguments and briefing. The court will take the matter under advisement, and decision will be issued within 90 days.